Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday evening. That's right. We're back to 3 weeks. I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm doing it again. But what do you say? I've been talked into it. But luckily, that means back with us after we haven't been able to get him all summer because the man's been very much in demand since he entered the Hall of Fame is Anscape's Mark Spears joining us from Oakland, California.
What's up, brother? Good to see y'all, man. Long time.
Thank you so much for coming back on. We appreciate it. Look forward to another great. How many seasons for you now, Spears? It's my 21st. You got to have like 24.
This is 25.
25. 25.
25. Not another 25.
Another long timer joining us from Naples, Florida. ESPN's front office insider, Bobby Marks. Hello, Bobby.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we? 28. For me,
28.
Ooh. Oh my God!
I'm the junior guy at 21. But I'll tell you though,
you're the baby.
The last eight have made me feel a lot younger than the first 20.
Yeah, is that what it's been 8 years now with us?
8 years in the league, in the media world of ESPN, 20 with the team size. As my 14-year-old says, I have pictures on my wall of there's pictures of team. The photos, and there's a picture of the 2013-14 season. And he always comes in there. He goes, "Dad, you looked awful in that picture." Wow. And I said, "Thanks, son, one day we'll explain everything, what happened there."
Oh, it was happy at first.
It was happy during the, well, here's now we're talking about the regular season. The beauty of the regular season is now like the honeymoon stuff is over, right? Like we start playing basketball games and guys will be unhappy about minutes and losing streaks and all this stuff now comes to the surface here.
Yeah. The coaches start wanting players traded, all that kind of stuff. I regret to inform you guys, I am doing this podcast from Tim Bontemps' apartment in New York City. Can you believe this? And he is sitting across the room and he's not allowed to say anything. He's not on this podcast. But I needed a safe haven, guys, in New York, and this is what was afforded to me. This is all I had.
How's the smell?
It's spectacular. You know, K-Bon has decorated it fine. Tim has been had limited ability to inflict any damage, so okay. We're good.
I just pictured him as a guy with incense.
Yeah, I'm sure if I asked, I'm sure there would be some of that available.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's something around here somewhere. All right. Well, Spears has to get over to the Chase Center tonight because he's going to watch the Suns play the Warriors. So obviously that game will have happened by the time this pod posts. But huge news in the NBA happened last night. Giannis Antetokounmpo agreeing to a three-year $186 million contract extension. 2 years guaranteed. He's now under contract for 4 more years. Bobby, I don't know how you felt about this, but I was surprised.
Yes and no. I'd gotten a little bit of a tip on Sunday. Not really about this extension here, but maybe just kind of looking long term. Possible options here. When it came across, when Giannis tweeted it, I was surprised. I was actually, and we've got Tim on a gag order right now. I was actually, Tim had texted me and says, like, is this real? Because it had Bucks and six and extended. So what are we doing? Like, is it Bucks?
Yeah, Giannis six tweeted, right. Giannis tweeted hashtag extended.
Yeah. I mean, I would say yes and no. I think, big picture, yes, but no, when you look at the big scope of things here, it's rare that a player who is 28 years old is looking out 10 years from now for the over 38 rule. Like that is a rarity here because him signing, you know, certainly this extension, which is, you know, 2 years and a player option in the third year gives him that flexibility in the future to sign multiple contracts and avoid, you know, we're not going to get into the minutiae, the over 38 rule. It's basically the same contract he could have signed next offseason, but one less year here. I think the one thing that I guess if I'm at fault and we overlooked is that, you know, we always talked about Giannis. It didn't make sense for Giannis because from a financial standpoint, he was basically only signing for another $100 million in new money because the player option was replaced with another contract here. But Giannis is in such an elite level, almost where, you know, where LeBron is, or maybe even where Kevin Durant, some of the Steph Curry, where it's not like him sacrificing an extra year. The veteran minimum is going to be there waiting for him. Like if he's healthy, there's going to be another $60 to $70 million per year contract for that next one. So whatever he might've sacrificed here, he will recoup in the back end.
Okay. But could he not still have signed the same contract next summer?
He could have, yes. He could have signed the 2+1 because, you know, how it's structured. He could have, next offseason, he could have signed a 4 for, I think, 234. He could have done the 2+1 that he just did right now, next summer. So essentially what he looked at is, says, give me another $100 million plus in guaranteed money now, which he did, with one less year to allow him to sign another extension potentially in 2026.
Yeah. So I guess just my question is, and I guess he got some more money by replacing his player option with a guaranteed year. You know, he had a player option that he had to basically decline and replace with a new part of a contract. And because it's a new contract, it's got a richer number. He got a little bit more money, but again, he could have done that a year from now. And now he's under contract for 4 years. And I want to be clear before I go down this line of questioning, Spears, or this line of discussion.
Uh-oh. Don't get the Milwaukee fans mad here.
No, look, I'm from a small market. I'm from Cleveland. I love the fact that small markets like Milwaukee are able to win. I'm just thinking about it from his perspective, which is last year, the Bucks had a great year, had a very disappointing end to it. This year, they look great. But I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how Adrian Griffin's going to be as a coach. I don't know how Chris Middleton is going to recover from that knee injury. I don't know how Dame Lillard and him are going to fit together. So my question is, now that he's extended, when he gets to the end of the deal, or when he gets to the end of this season, to be clear, he now has 3 years left on his contract. If he decides that he doesn't like the way that things are going in Milwaukee, and I'm not saying that he would, but this is reality. A year ago, we were celebrating Dame's extension. A year later, he asks out. And Dame runs into a problem where his leverage is limited because he's got all these years left on his contract. In theory, if Giannis, and it's not like Giannis has never thought about asking out of Milwaukee. I will give you the quotes that he had in August. So I would just say, playing devil's advocate here, Spears, why extend now when he can get the same contract in 6 months? And if he doesn't like the way this season goes, he then loses leverage potentially when he wants, you know, not if the whatever happens, an asteroid hits. Why?
I was there media day and he came up and did an interview with me and he kind of lamented on cursing. Remember his quote, he said, it didn't make sense to sign a contract right now. Money's not important. A lot of bleeping money is important. And he had just said that a couple minutes earlier. And he's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't curse like that. He felt bad about it. But obviously, a lot of freaking money could have been had, more had he waited. I wonder if somebody cautioned him about, and obviously, this is neither here nor there with money, but having to deal with that question all season, wherever he went. Go to Miami, right? You go to New York. Can you come here? Are you going to come here? Would you be interested in coming here? And to focus that spotlight. I mean, I'm trying to think of something. The spotlight that comes with being questioned about that from time to time, having a cloud over him. Every city he goes with people asking him that question. So now he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. $186 million is a lot of money. Like, and maybe when you think about in the grand scheme of things, I know such was the case when Melo signed that deal early in his career, LeBron and Chris Bosh and Wade didn't. When you come from perhaps the circumstances he comes from and that money sitting on the table, like, you just never know what the future holds in terms of getting hurt and things like that. So maybe from a security standpoint, that was good to him. I never got really see him in another uniform. I don't see him as a guy that like yearns for the big lights or the big city. He can go to the big city when the season's over, go back to Greece, right? Hang out in Athens. And so I think once they got Dame, although he kind of kept the cards close to his vest, seeing Dame at practice, I talked to Chris Middleton. He feels like he's going to be fine. Perhaps he's seeing things in training camp and just feels a commitment is necessary based on he asked them to do something, and they did it. And the one thing I always think, too, and Paul George showed you this, you could take the money now and figure the rest out later.
Ah, thank you, Mr. Spears. So this, I want to be 100% clear. I have no knowledge of this. Okay. But I'm just saying that when Paul George took a contract extension, or was a new contract, he was a free agent. When Paul George took a new contract with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and to be clear, this is not apples to apples because Giannis has long history, deep roots in Milwaukee. It is not comparable to a guy who played 1 year in Oklahoma City. Also, a huge congratulations to the Bucks organization. A huge congratulations to John Horst, their general manager. A huge congratulations to Wes Edens, their governor. Congratulations to Jimmy Haslam and Jamie Dimon, their two other primary owners. Who else do I got to congratulate? The mayor of Milwaukee. They executed this. They heard what Giannis said in August. They went out and traded for Dame. They got his commitment in October. Tremendous work by the Bucks. Okay, Giannis, I said this morning on television, they should prepare to name the square in the Deer District Giannis Square, Antetokounmpo Plaza, Greek Freak Alley, whatever you want to call it. Like, this is a huge gift he's given, with everybody having done a lot of work. I want to be overly cautious to not miscongratulate what's happened. But in the case of Paul George, when that happened, when he recommitted and re-signed with the Thunder without taking any visits or anything like that, he committed at 12:01, the big party he had with Russell Westbrook. The understanding that he had with the organization was, hey, I'm sticking with you. I'm going to recommit. But if someday I decide maybe I don't want to be here, let's have an agreement right now that we're going to be friends about it. The Thunder basically said, you got it. A year later, he said, hey, I'd really like to go play in Los Angeles with Kawhi Leonard. And you know what? It worked out for the Thunder, because instead of worrying about losing him in free agency, they ended up getting a great trade, Bobby, which they're still bearing fruit. But that trade got him Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and more fruit to come. So I would just say that sometimes signing a long-term contract comes with certain understandings. I'm not saying that's what's happening here, okay, to be completely clear. But it has happened before in the NBA that such an accommodation will be worked out. And if that's the case, I still think it's a great deal for the team, especially if you're not sure about the free agent. And again, a great day for Milwaukee. Have I brought this up without causing problems, Bobby, or do you think I'm in trouble?
No, I said it yesterday. I mean, like,
Spears just gave me a grimace. He thinks I'm in trouble.
We've written about it. I mean, the trend is sign now, ask out later. Now, I'm not ready to put Giannis in that situation. And certainly the Damian Lillard situation was different. You know, Damian signed that extension last offseason, and then that Portland team from a roster standpoint is not where Milwaukee is right now. Like, it's totally
they're
different
making
here.
Different decisions. That's right.
Yeah. Different decision. And then, basically got to the point where Damian had to ask out because they were going in a different direction. But here's the reality with Milwaukee. You have the unknown in Chris Middleton. He is the X factor for my concern as far as where he is health wise. You have a rookie coach in Adrian Griffin. You have depleted all your draft picks here, and I don't think the wheels will fall off. I think they'll have a really good year, but just because you sign a 3-year contract or a 3-year extension in this world, in the NBA world, doesn't mean anything anymore. Like that's the reality of the situation, where it doesn't mean much at all. He would have to be but here's the thing though. If he did not sign the extension and was going into the last year of his contract, you can kind of see it where, you know what, I'm going to play it out. Where now he would almost have to be the bad guy now, where he's under contract for 4 years. Wait a minute. We took care of you. We extended you. You know,
got you Dame.
Where's your, yeah, we got you Dame. Where's the loyalty factor here, where that's where, if it ever got to a point where they lose in the first round and he looks at him like, man, this is not, I want to go somewhere else here. He would have, you know, he'd have to be the bad guy in this situation.
Yeah. Do you see that in him?
No.
Yeah.
I don't.
This is the second time he has signed before he had to. You know, when he did the Supermax extension a couple years ago, he could have waited instead for really no reason other than to support the Bucks and, you know, make sure there would be a drama-free season. He extended. And it was a gift to the Bucks at that time, and they won the title that year. So, hey, you know, he's taking the drama out of this now.
Can we at least glory in the fact that this guy is going to make $62 million a year?
Well, here's the funny thing,
but Mark, he would have made that anyway. It's well, not like he wouldn't have gotten that anyway.
No, but it's still like, wow.
Here's the funny thing is, and for everyone who is listening and is watching this, one of the things I like to do is give all our writers some like notes. Whenever certain situations, contract extensions, and when Giannis was extension eligible back in September, I put a little packet together and I emailed everything. And I said, well, you can only earn another $100 million in new money. And Spears emails me, he goes, only $100 million. And I said to Mark, you've been around this long enough. We live in a world where this is not real. Like, this is not this
first
is,
world problems, baby.
Yes, the first world problems. Athlete money is not, we cannot equate it to our own money.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
We cannot do that. But listen, he's you know, he'll get probably two more big contracts. I mean, this guy at the end of the day could make probably maybe $600 million in his career.
Yeah, you're saying $62 million a year, Spears. Depending on what happens with the NBA TV rights, there's two more years left in this deal. The NBA is hoping pretty clearly to, you know, at least double their, last time around, they tripled their rights. Maybe they'll triple them again, but they're hoping to at least double their rights.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see if how they get phased in. Last time there was famously the cap spike in 2016. But it's possible that in the next decade, we could see $100 million a year contracts,
yeah,
depending on how everything comes to play. So, like, yeah, I agree. He locked it in. It's easy for me to say, keep your options open. He's got $186 million on the balance sheet. And, you know, as Giannis's own words, he cares a lot of bleeping money. And he's now got that guaranteed. So, look, I'm doing this as my job, which is to analyze decisions, which is why it was surprising. Bobby, did you know, maybe you had a 24-hour heads up, but like over the last week or two, did you have any conversations about the deadline Monday night?
Nope. He was not even, I wrote about it and I basically used his line about, like, you know, Giannis's line, why it didn't make sense. I mean, I got a little bit of a tip sometime during Sunday, but not really, not to the point where it raised the red flag for me.
Spears, did one conversation you have about, oh my gosh, Giannis has this deadline on Monday to extend? I didn't have one.
Apparently didn't feel that way when I was in Milwaukee either. You know, and if you read the sit down I had with him, there was a lot of reflection about wait and see. Let's wait and see. Yes, I mentioned Oscar and Kareem to him. And being on that, let's wait and see. We haven't practiced together yet. We haven't played together yet. It wasn't like, you know, I expected probably a little bit more enthusiasm. Not that he didn't say that they couldn't be great together, but it was more of a definitely a wait and see approach, which made me feel like such would be the case with his contract.
Yeah, which was not unreasonable. It's not, I mean, when they did the Dame deal, it was obviously a huge response and there was a good feel that he was going to remain there. But when he said, I'll deal with it in a year, it wasn't like there were people like up in arms. People were like, okay, that makes sense. So, you know, look, I'm sure he thought about it a lot. We'll see next summer whether or not that was a brilliant move and they're celebrating another title, or whether or not it has an effect on them. But I hate to have that conversation because it's a reflection of where the NBA is now. But we just got out of a stalemate with Damian Lillard, and that stalemate existed because Dame didn't have a no trade clause, which Giannis will not have, and because Dame had so many years left on his contract. So I hate to take that note, but it's a responsibility that I have to do.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Spears, you pulled the tarp off of something this week, a diary that you're going to be doing with Bradley Beal throughout the course of the season. And in the first installment at Anscape, Brad talked about his decision to leave the Wizards. The Wizards coming to him, even though he had the no trade clause. I wish you could tell me how this came to be that he decided to do this, because this is something that's happened. You've done this before with rookies. I can't remember the last time a star player did a season long diary that wasn't, you know, for his own platform. How it came about and what he talked about in his first installment with you.
Yeah, no, I approached him and his management about a month and a half ago, and Brad worked it too, man. I didn't think he was going to do it for a minute. Like, he took a long time to think about it and decide whether he wanted to do a diary or not. And last season, I thought I had a really good one with CJ McCollum. He was extremely generous with his time and had a lot to say. And CJ, actually, Brian, you'll get a kick out of this. He would edit his own copy because it was his diary. Like, I would send it to him and he would edit it. But I think what was important to Brad, which was different than CJ, also was he wanted a video platform to go with it as well. Which I think is really, really smart, because I don't know if there's a big market team with such small market interests or such little interests as Washington. Like, nobody talks about the Wizards. There's no buzz there. They might be last in the NBA in jersey sales, you know, and I think that a lot of people still don't know Bradley Beal's story. And I think he realizes that. And now going to Phoenix, there's a spotlight on him that he's never had before. There's an ability to win a title, which he's never had before, where he walked into a season thinking this could legitimately happen. And I think he realizes now this gives him an opportunity to tell the world his story in a way, some friends say, man, I'm glad you're doing this because I don't really know much about him. And so the interesting thing when he talked about the trade and Bobby were like this, like, we were about to pack up. I thought we had everything. And then he just interjected and gave us that last gem, like breaking down like all the teams. I was like, oh, my goodness, this is great. Like, saying Milwaukee, New York, Brooklyn, Miami, and how Miami was his first choice and all that, like. And basically the Heat certainly, and I'll let Bobby interject on this, but the Heat felt like it should be known that he had a no trade clause that he didn't want to give up, which Bradley's people say different.
The Heat wanted to have him vacate the no trade. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. 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 So they feel like when Bradley said in the diary, you know, Mickey Arison was dragging his feet. That wasn't fair. But on the flip side, they believe that Miami didn't want to take on the money of Beal's contract, which ultimately caused them to walk away, which is, you know, he said, right? So, but also the point you made earlier, which I thought was interesting, was him saying that, you know, basically the new Wizards brass came in and said, hey, you know, we could help accommodate you to go somewhere else. And I'm sure Bobby's had some interesting conversations in his front office days, but to basically walk in your first meeting and tell the starter franchise, hey, you know what, you should go somewhere else, man. Like, you don't have to go home, but you got to get the hell out of here. And he's like 160 points away from being I wonder if he wanted to like get the all-time leading scorer first and then get traded at the trade deadline, right?
You know, maybe like, that was written about or he talked about that before. This is the first time I've heard him talk about that.
Yeah.
You're saying that he was 160 points away from Elvin Hayes, right?
Yes. He's 160 points away.
Yeah, so he was like basically less than a month, a couple of weeks. I mean, hell, if he had a hot start, he was maybe less depending on how he went. He's had 50-point games. That he would have been the all-time leading scorer, and the fact that he didn't get it, it bothers him a little bit.
He's very honest. He's like, yeah, you know, toward the end of my career, hopefully I could go back there, finish up. So I know he wants that. He knows he's going to get his jersey retired there, but his honesty was really
well. He goes, listen, there's only 30 guys who are all-time team leading scorers. He kind of wanted to be on that list.
Yeah. So we'll see if he ends up being there in the end. But yeah, no, there was so much I left on the table with that we'll probably get into later with his family and stuff like that. But to hear him reflect, like, he was like, dang, it was a gut punch. They the Wizards pushed me out. Like, I'm Bradley Beal, man. Like, are you serious?
But he couldn't have been absolutely positively stunned. He saw the way the tea leaves were going too. I mean, I understand.
I think
that,
as a star though, when you hear it, it's different, right?
Yeah, when the team comes to you and says it's time to move on.
He had a no trade clause, like one of the few people that had it, so he could have told them no. But like the fact that they came in and said, "Hey, man, you know, we got a good moving company."
Have you seen the weather?
Where would you like to live?
In Phoenix, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, well, Bobby,
I wish I could have heard their pitch to him when they walked in. Like, even if you think they're gonna could do that, you're like, I'm the face of the franchise. They ain't gonna do that to me.
That is a unique situation, Bobby. What you know, not that a team wants to trade a player, but a team in this boat with the no trade to deal with.
Well, it's almost like the reverse of a player signing an extension and then asking out. It's almost the reversal here, where Beal signed a contract $250 last offseason, had the no trade clause, the only player in the NBA that had it. And then a year later, things changed where Tommy Shepard, you know, in that front office that signed him are now out. Michael Winger, who was lost with the Clippers prior to OKC, comes in, and now all of a sudden having a $50 million player on your cap sheet doesn't fit anymore. You know, Bradley Beal doesn't, as good as he is, doesn't fit as far as them trying to recoup as many draft assets. And I think that the fascinating part is that players with no trade clauses, when you give permissions, and I certainly saw this a long time ago with when Carmelo went through it and with Denver, is when teams like Miami or Phoenix or other teams that might have been interested are allowed to talk to the player, you know, are allowed to kind of, you know, it's basically like the legal version of tampering. That it's been approved here, where whether you're talking to the agent and you're Phoenix and you're talking with Mark Bartelstein, his agent, trying to put the right trade package together that would accommodate him
I wrote about the meeting that the Suns had. They had a meeting in at the Four Seasons here in New York. Matt Ishbia got the biggest suite that he could get, and they had a meeting. It was like a free agent meeting, except for it wasn't, you know, and even if Brad gave the wink and the nod, then they had to go negotiate the trade. You weren't negotiating the contract, you're negotiating the trade. It is an awkward situation.
And his wife, I talked to his wife a little bit too. She was in that meeting and
she was.
Yeah. Apparently that sales job they did in that meeting, you know, but Bradley was like, well, What you gonna trade Book? I think he didn't realize at the time that they could move Chris Paul and his contract, and that Chris Paul was the person, because it's kind of masterful what Phoenix was able to do. And they helped, you know, the Bucks get Jordan Poole. I mean, I'm sorry, not the Bucks, the Bullets, the Wizards.
The Wizards get Jordan. You have been around for 25 years.
Yeah. And I'm curious. I mean, so it's they traded a shooter, a scorer, for a younger version, right? A younger, exciting scorer.
Well, there's all kinds of sliding. There's all kinds of sliding doors here, Bobby, because Miami was still hoping to get Dame at that time, right? We knew Dame was coming on the market. Milwaukee, obviously, I remember, you know, Giannis, you know, he had been interested in trading for Bradley Beal for years. I know that he had been interested in playing for Dame Lillard, but I think, you know, because Bradley Beal was a guy who was rumored on and off over the last 4 or 5 years, I think that was a player that Giannis had. Obviously, the Bucks were kicking that around. They had the ammunition eventually to get Dame. So that's interesting that they're on there. You know, the Knicks in Brooklyn, I think both of those teams were, you know, I think the Knicks may have, I don't know for sure what the Knicks were thinking, but I think the Knicks have big aspirations. And if they had gotten Bradley Beal and then he wanted to keep that no trade, it might have limited what they were willing to do. So, like, you know, the market of people who were willing to accept both Bradley Beal at that contract and him keeping the no trade was limited, which this interview that Spears did kind of reveal.
Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think the you know, certainly when Beal, when you look at the trade package, they were able to get back for him. I think that's when you say, well, wait a minute, Miami couldn't have done that. When you look at the Chris Paul contract, Landry Shamet, and then it was basically a bunch of pick swaps in there. That's where it kind of comes into play. If you're a Heat fan, you're thinking, well, could we have done Kyle Lowry and, you know, maybe pick swaps and not trade out Tyler Hero. But as you've said, and now you're taking on that $50 million salary. And at the end of the day, you know, it's basically musical chairs and Miami got caught sitting on the floor, right? You know, Boston got Holiday, Milwaukee got, you know, Lillard, Phoenix got Beal, and Miami's sitting here now with, you know, a bunch of players they've signed with for the, you know, they think they have a better team than last year. We'll see how that plays out. But, you know, a bunch of players that were signed to the minimum contract and Kyle Lowry on this expiring contract.
Yeah. So Beal, by the way, is, I don't think he's going to play tonight. He's dinged up.
Here, and they'll probably one of the next two games.
Yeah. The thing about Beal, we'll see, because he's been slowed down in the preseason and he's probably not going to play in this game at Golden State. They haven't sort of figured out how they're going to use him. I think what they're probably going to do is Devin Booker historically plays the entire first quarter, and if not the entire third, most of the third.
And he's playing.
Yeah, Booker was questionable for this game too. I think what they'll end up doing is they'll build in Bradley Beal time. When I covered the Miami Heat and they had LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, Eric Spoelstra would really try to build in, and I would call it Bosch time or Wade time, where they would sort of be featured throughout the game to stagger them. I suspect that Frank Vogel will do that. And I suspect what they'll try to do is have Beal be playing when Booker is resting in both halves. But they haven't gotten that smoothed over yet. And now Beal is shaking off an injury. So what I'd say about the Suns is, in addition to having 11 or 12 new players, whatever it is, completely rebuilding their rotation from scratch, they have not figured out exactly how they're going to use their rotation for their stars yet. So I don't know. I don't know what exactly is going to start. I mean, for all I know, Durant will score 47 tonight and Booker will have, you know, 32 and they'll win, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's a bit of a, just a period for the Suns here. So I'm not going to be on them too much if they struggle a little bit. But speaking of the Sun, Spears, you spoke to Kevin Durant ahead of his game tonight. Now, it'll already have happened by this time, this pod post, but I didn't realize until the last couple of days, Durant's never played at the Chase Center.
He did, in front of fans.
Oh, and not in front of fans. Yeah. That's what I mean, in front of fans. So he talked about that. That's going to happen tonight.
Yeah, no, certainly be interesting to see how the crowd reacts to him. I think now any bitterness they had about him deciding to leave is probably gone. Like, and Durant in a lot of ways is saying all the right things too, in terms of his time here and appreciating it more. And I asked him about like, what if, and he definitely didn't really want to go down that road. You know, I wonder if he feels if he's, you know, asked, because I wonder if he felt like he still made the right decision. But I did ask him, which was interesting, is I like, look, you played for two teams that went to the finals. Like, how does this Suns team compare? And he basically like snarled at the Oklahoma City part. Like, this is, you know, like, I'm not putting Oklahoma City in this conversation. But he definitely didn't put Suns on the same level of that Warriors team either. He was like, that team was super special, the success it had going to three finals. His love for that team kind of surprised me, that he just had that much in love, respect for that time on and off the court. And, you know, I do wonder if there was a way he could go back in time, what he should have done. And I think the Warriors probably wish there were some things they could have done better to get all on the same page, because that last year he was here, he definitely seemed miserable. And obviously there was a situation with Draymond. And I think it's an interesting, complex thing with stars. When, you know, when LeBron went to Miami, it was always still going to be Wade County, no matter how big LeBron was, right? You come to the Bay, ain't nobody pushing Steph to the side or even standing next to him. But in Brooklyn and Oklahoma City and Phoenix, even though Book gets mentioned last, it's Durant. You know, it's Durant, right? So I wonder now, as these guys are getting older, you know, maybe there was some ego back then that isn't the same now. I do wonder if he would make that decision again, but he told me that there was no regrets in that.
Well, it kind of drives me crazy when people, this is one of my pet things, but it kind of drives me crazy when people try to denigrate those two titles, particularly 2017. I'm sorry, they needed Durant to win that year.
Yeah.
You know, we're starting a season, guys, where you could make a case, in my view, for six teams to win right out of the gate. And there are another couple that, depending on how things go, like however the Harden situation works out, that you could expand that list to seven or eight. Like, what happens with some other teams like Miami? I just want to point out, in 2017.
Well, if you're me, it could be eight if you're picking the Knicks to win it all.
We'll talk about
that. That's assuming Brian didn't have them in that group anyway.
That's a fair assumption, Spears. I'll just point out that in 2017, the Cavs went 12-1 through the Eastern Conference playoffs, and the Warriors went 12-0 through the Western Conference playoffs. The league was a little bit different back then, and it was because of the Spurs, or the Warriors and Cavs had so much talent. But part of the reason they were so good is because they were so good, and they beat a team that was awesome, and they beat a team that was awesome.
If Durant didn't get hurt and Clay didn't get hurt, they would have been three-peat. You know,
which we haven't had in 20 years.
I wonder if Durant still leaves if they had won. You know what I mean? I kind of feel like he still would have left.
I do too. But yeah, I mean, I think I just don't accept. You can argue about the way that it came together, Bobby, with the cap spike and the light years ahead. And you can argue and say that, you know, he didn't need to go to a team that was on top that had 73 wins. You can say all that. I reject on its face that the Warriors didn't need him to win. I think if the Warriors didn't have him, they would have lost two in a row to the Cavs, period.
Oh, I agree. I mean, even, you know, coming off the year they lost to the Cleveland, and you basically swap out Harrison Barnes and Bogut for Durant, right? I mean, that's basically the trade that you made. And so
But Brian, if Bogut doesn't get hurt and Draymond doesn't get hurt, the Warriors probably win that series.
Probably, yeah. Well, Draymond got suspended, so, but yeah, I agree.
Why would you assume that they would definitely beat them?
Because the Cavs were that good, and the Cavs went out and got Kyle Korver. The Cavs were really, really good.
Okay.
Like, if you're saying to me the Warriors could win that series, of course they could.
Okay. Like, I thought absolutely. You were saying that there was no way.
No, I'm not saying it would be 4-0. Okay. I mean, it was 4-1 as it was. I'm just saying, like, there's no way that you can look at that. You can look at that Cavs team and say
they've been the favorite.
They certainly. Well, they played during the regular season and they split.
Yeah.
That was with Durant. So
Durant was awesome. Yeah. in that as well.
So,
and if you think about it, Curry didn't have a signature finals moment. And obviously Durant's arrival changed that or affected that. But his signature finals moment didn't come till Boston.
Correct. And look, the signature finals moment could have come there too. Yeah. Because one of the other things is the concept that Steph Curry wasn't a big contributor in those three titles. He absolutely was. But like, look, I'm not trying to say that the 2017 Warriors were like not. I mean, obviously they were already a champion, but I'm just saying Durant was a full-fledged important member of that title.
No, they were unstoppable offensively.
And I would expect and hope that
would say that they were the most intimidating offensive team ever with those three?
I mean, we'll see what happens with this Suns team because they could scare some people, but they were the most intimidating team, period.
Yeah.
I mean, they had championship, they had MVP redundancy.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about that. I mean, that's happened a few times in NBA history, but only a few.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. This is, I could go on and on about this and I'll probably get myself in trouble. Next thing you know, I'll be, you know, being ripped in Golden State again, which is what I'm not looking for right now. There's a real value in having champion MVP redundancy, to put it mildly.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket. With Vivid Seat Rewards, score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Okay, so Bobby, you did one of my favorite things that you and Kevin Pelton do every year. The NBA Future Power Rankings came out last week. This is where, actually, tell us about your methodology for these.
Well, you have to include your landlord for a night also as a part of this, Mr. Bontemps.
That's right. I just got the evil eye. Bontemps did it too. I'm getting a sneer.
And Andre Snellings was on this. So we, the four of us. There's five categories that we rank. Players is certainly the most weighted category, which is the roster, and we look at it for the next 3 years. So this year and then two more years out. Players, draft, as far as your draft capital, money, which is your cap space flexibility moving forward, your market, which if you're in Miami, you're going to get a high score. And then management, which consists of coaching, front office, and then your ownership. The four of us rank them between 0 and 100 by fives and tens. Kevin's got a nice formula that kind of spits out the results after we do it. Memphis, the past 2 years, had ranked number one. They'd went back to back years. They fell to number four. Boston this year is number one based on certainly the rot. And I know they're money wise, they're not in a good situation, but roster wise, Jaylen Brown, Supermax, Jason Tatum, likely next year, Drew Holiday, likely possible extension, the Porzingis trade. They didn't give up much draft capital in the Holiday trade. One of those picks was a Golden State, Golden State first, and they're sitting at number one right now.
Yeah, so they moved up from three from last year, which I think is an indication of adding Drew Holiday and Chris Kristaps Porzingis because they rank number one. You think they've got I don't mean you, Bobby, but collectively, you guys think that they've got the best roster.
Yeah,
under players, you've got them as number one, and that's why they're there. Also, you rank them pretty high in management. And that's not unreasonable. The Nuggets, by the way, who were ranked ninth last year, are number two. I don't want to give the Denver fans another reason to hate ESPN. They're number two. It's not totally an insult. You know, and you have them, you guys have them as the second best roster. So I feel like, you know, Spears, one of the things that is stood out here is that the Oklahoma City Thunder leapt from number 23 a year ago to number three this year. And a large part because how much you guys value how well they've drafted over the last couple of years. Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren in the same class, Josh Giddey from a couple of years ago, and because of their future draft assets. So I don't know how you felt about this Thunder being all the way up there at number three, Spears.
I love it. I agree with it. And are any of these guys over 25, the core?
No, I think they have like six or seven players under 25.
I mean, Shea, this season, I think we're really going to see him get the love he is deserving of. Chet, the Chet Wimby, I think rivalry is going to begin. I really love – I never love watching a preseason game more than I love Chet and Wimby. And Giddey is just
– So like here's the thing. I really think they don't like each other.
I agree. That's why I loved it.
They haven't
goes
like
back to set... the USA France game under, because if you look at that, I think Chet still sees him. Wimby took it personal that Chet was getting all this attention, and then USA beat him. But that's when basically Wimby arrived. It wasn't Vegas. It was that game against Chet, because Chet was the dude. So
I asked Victor after the game.
Yeah.
About Chet. And Victor did not give me an answer about Chet. I mean, he didn't say no comment.
Yeah.
He said a bunch of words. Chet had this awesome game, right? And looked great. And by the way, so did Victor. And I did ask Chet about Victor, and he gave, you know, he said nice things. But I asked Victor about Chet, and he basically wouldn't. He said a bunch of words, but none of them were about Chet.
Yeah.
And that was the first meeting. by the way, November 14th, I think it's on TNT.
Must see.
Spurs at Thunder.
Yeah. And I wonder if he has the same, Wimby has the same rivalry with Scoot, but it's probably more in Scoot's end. Because if you remember, Wimby said, if was I born wasn't born, Scoot Henderson probably would be the number one pick.
I think Scoot has a little more rivalry with Brandon Miller. I think there's an edge there as far as Brandon Miller going at number two to Charlotte, where Scoot felt like he was the, you know, like he felt like he was the guy there.
Yeah. But I think he knows in terms of the environment that Portland's a better environment for him. To me, I think that's one of those blessing in disguise picks, especially with the having Chauncey and Brogdon and Pujetter and, you know, having Scottie Brooks, like having those people around you, he wouldn't have had that environment in Charlotte. So you're probably right from an ego thing, and it's closer to Atlanta. But Portland is definitely the better place for him. When Wimby made that comment, Scoot was pretty pissed about it.
So there was a, it has not been released in America yet. It'll be released in America in a few weeks, or I don't know. It'll be released in America soon. But Wembanyama had a documentary made about his last year. It's been released in French, and the filmmaker's with him all year. And I don't, just to be clear, I've seen parts of it. I don't know whether this edit will make it into the American version. But one of the things that happened was, so he said that, I can't remember if Spears, if it was before the first game in Vegas or after the first game in Vegas. I think it might've been before. And his coach called him aside, Vincent Collet, and called him aside and said, hey, you know, you should probably watch out for Scoot in this game, because I think they're a little upset with what you said. And Victor, kind of admitted, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Like, I think he recognized he may have gotten a little bit more blunt than he needed to be. And one of the things that's interesting in talking to French media members, even though Victor's command of English is absolutely spectacular, and he speaks almost accent-free, which is not common for native French speakers, he seems to be a little bit more frank and emboldened in English than he is in French, because he still gives interviews in French routinely. There's a bunch of French media who have moved to Texas. And he tends to be a little bit more bland in French, but a little bit more bold in English. And that may be kind of what happened there. But yeah, I mean, you know, I just, you know, Chet, them being number three, I mean, is a bet on Chet, Bobby, I would think too. Because, you know, if you're going to take them up, what you're basically saying is that you think that, you know, Chet is going to rise to the level of a player that can, you know, be a supporting guy to a number one like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
It's a huge jump. I mean, they went 20, I think 20 spots, right? 23-3 for a team that lost in the play-in tournament. That's right. A monster jump here. I don't know how happy it made Sam Presti as far as we're putting that kind of the cart before the horse here, but I mean, look,
please tell me what makes Sam Presti happy. I'll wait.
Shai, Jalen Williams,
Emerson basketball.
Chet. I think he likes playing the drums.
I mean, you look at what they have. I mean, Shai, Jalen Williams, Chet, Josh Giddey. I mean, those four guys in itself, 35 draft picks in the next 7 years, 15 first, flexibility out the wazoo, a good coach, a strong management group. I mean, there's a reason why we put them at that way. I mean, we ranked San Antonio at 18. They were 28 last year. And we talked about it on NBA Today, and Perk thought they should have been one. And I was like, well, wait a minute. Like, yeah. Let's.
I'm not sure Perk's methodology is in depth.
Yeah. And Brian, you made a good point. Like, yeah, Victor is terrific and he could be, you know, top 10 or whatever.
Would you change it now?
I wouldn't, because what else we have? I think we have to focus on the other parts around. That's the big thing as far as, and I have nice players. Sohan's a nice player. Keldon Johnson's a nice player. Zach Collins is a nice complimentary player. Yeah. They have nice young players around, but listen, if they go 35 and 47 this year and we're like, whoa, and they're like, you know, like, and these guys really take another step, then they'll move up here, but not enough. That they went up 10 spots, which I think was fair. But if Victor wows and the other players come and they all of a sudden get a number one pick again, then of course they'll move up. And as I said on TV, we wrote San Antonio 18 in pencil, because the flexibility there is to get a lot better.
All right. One of the other teams that moved up a bunch in the rankings, I believe 9 spots from number 17 to number 8, Bobby, the New York Knickerbockers, which is interesting because they have done a much better job. They made the second round of the playoffs last year, but it's hard to see where their future is going to be. And you, however, are extremely high on their present, Bobby, by picking them in a stunning move. You didn't pick them to win the title. You picked them to win the East.
I did. I'm on an island by myself, and I.
You know, oh yes, you
all,
are.
Oh, I'm an island for all the categories. I'm on an island for. First of all, I one of my least favorite things is predictions, because of course people find them and then they send you messages and all that stuff. So I do it anyway. I don't want to make our bosses mad. But back in August when the schedule came out, we did that 5-on-5 or whatever. And they asked me, what's the one intriguing match? What's the one finals, the finals preview we could see early in the season? And I think I put Knicks at Suns. I almost got the key to New York City by the mayor there because of that. And I was in the good gracious there. And I said, you know what? I can't go back on it now. Might as well go all in. And I had Knicks.
Wow, that's some methodology.
Finals. Yeah,
for a guy who for a guy who has a pretty in-depth methodology, this is surprising.
Oh, for a guy who worked for the Nets and there was basically a Cold War for 20 years. I mean, come on. And now I'm.
I don't think it's over.
Oh, I don't think so either. And so yes, I am high on the Knicks. I think a lot of it's going to happen. You know what happens with Julius Randle. I mean, that's going to be, of course, another. X factor here, but yes, they moved up to number eight. I like where they are right now. Am I ready to put them where Milwaukee and Boston are? No. I think those two teams are more talented. I think they have closers. Certainly, I like Jalen Brunson here, but I think there is another player. They're another player away from being in that upper echelon. But, and they have, listen, they've been sitting on the draft equity for a long time. They could have gone out and got Bradley Beal. Probably. Could they have gone out and tried to get Damian Lillard if they wanted to cash in some of these things here? We'll see what happens in Philadelphia with Joel Embiid down the road. So I do like where they are. They've got the flexibility. They've got the draft capital. I like their roster. I think they're probably a top 10 roster. I like Tibbs, certainly, and what Leon has been able. They've been that patient card here. And I think they've earned that number eight ranking. With that said, do I see them in, you know, would I go to Vegas right now and put my mortgage on them winning the Eastern Conference? I would. I mean, that's just the reality of it, because I think they are one trade away from getting in that elite, you know, that elite company.
Well, that's a bet on their future. So in the short term future, to be sure. So, but that is a really good read. We just really just scratched the surface, as is, Spears pieces that come out. God, Spears puts out a lot of stuff, Bobby. There's a lot of stuff on Antscape from Spears. He's always all over the country. It's hard to book him on this pod, and he's got.
I think the Beal thing is going to be, and CJ last year was terrific. Also, I mean, I love when players go kind of you know in their own words. I think the Beal situation is going to be so fascinating based on a team that's got a target on his back on their back. For a player, and we talked about it, that was basically has been under the radar. And a lot of it, you know, that Wizards team, he hadn't been healthy as much on the court, had some injuries. But him in like that third role, I mean, like Durant, Booker, and then you have a bunch of other complimentary players, and now you ask him to do things that he doesn't have to do, like back in the Wizards day, and hearing from him during the journey, I think it's going to be a, you know, fascinating stuff to read about.
All right. Well, I look forward to it.
Glad you're excited about it. Thank you.
Very much looking forward to that. It was a surprise. I didn't know that was coming. So it was this nice surprise. All right. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Spears. Thank you, Jackson. Thank you to the Bontemps family. And thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll be back with you on Friday with the Tims 3 times a week. Here we go. And we will talk to you soon.